Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Good morning, Dr. Bryce Edwards from Victoria University. How's it going?
Very well, thanks, Johnny.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, we've sort of returned from our summer holidays, and there was a lot of noise about the Treaty Principles Bill, and kind of on the back of that, there was something called the Regulatory Standards Bill, which also kind of popped up in the media, but without quite as much visibility. I'm still a bit foggy on exactly what it sets out to do and its objectives. Bryce, are you able to give us a bit of background on what the Regulatory Standards Bill exactly is and what it's planning to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, it's kind of gone below the radar. More attention has been on the Treaty Principles Bill, which really is already dead because National and New Zealand First aren't going to vote for it in the coalition. But this bill is set to go forward. So it's a bill that's been put forward by David Seymour and the ACT Party, and it's in the coalition agreement formed with National and New Zealand First that they will pass a bill that essentially is about cutting red tape. So it goes along with David Seymour's new Ministry of Regulations, and it's a way that ACT want to set some benchmarks and some mechanisms so that, in their view, laws aren't put forward that require too much has too many downsides for society and particularly business. So it's all about keeping red tape in check. And so they're going to set up this new regulatory standards board as part of this legislation, and that will be a board appointed by the Minister of Regulation, so David Seymour at the moment, who will kind of vet all legislation and rules being put forward by the government to make sure that it isn't going to be too much of an imposition on the economy and society. So it's quite a big deal, really, because it sounds a bit dry, maybe, but it's going to be a way for essentially business and ACT, really, to be able to keep more sort of collectivist, legislation from being enacted. And so one thing that's particularly the critics are concerned about, myself included, is that it's really going to, prioritise the profits of business above any sort of social or public interest, really. So if a business, the typical one is like a tobacco industry, are making profits and the government come in and say, well, actually, we want to tighten regulations on this industry, they'll need to be compensated according to this bill. So the tobacco companies would need to, because they'll lose some of their property rights, you see, and they'll lose some of their profitability. And so this bill is saying they will need to be compensated. So this is a huge, could have a huge impact on the ability of governments to regulate or, do things in the public interest if it has a negative influence on someone that has a property right. So it's being therefore seen as quite a kind of libertarian or very pro-business piece of legislation.
This isn't the first time a version of this bill has been introduced to Parliament. This is like number three or four it's had a go at passing. What are some of the key reasons previous attempts to pass similar legislation has failed?
Well, yes, it originally was produced by the Business Roundtable. They came up with the idea. They passed it on to the ACT Party. So ACT, under previous leaders like Rodney Hyde, had tried to push this through Parliament. But essentially, other coalition partners and others in Parliament had balked at this and said, no way, this is kind of libertarian right-wing policies, and even sort of National Party supporters just find this too extreme in the past. But it seems that Luxon, in signing this coalition agreement with ACT, have already agreed to pass it. So it's a bit of a mystery. But of course, just to be clear, the government's only consulting about it at the moment. They haven't even drafted their bill. So they're set to introduce it later in the year. And I guess, you know, if there's enough opposition and critique of it, it may still be prevented, or it might be watered down in its effect. But at this stage, yeah, it's I think it's much more significant than, you know, some of the other controversial pieces of legislation that the government have passed. I mean, if anything, it's quite similar to the Fast Track Act.
Yes.
And giving sort of businesses the ability to do what they want, really.
And the absence of a clear reference to the Treaty of Waitangi in the bill has been a point of contention. How do you think this is going to affect the relationship between the Crown and Māori?
Look, this is a hard one. There's nothing to say that every government has to put every legislation, including something about the treaty, in it. And of course, this particular government has decided not to go along with that idea that recent governments have been doing. I think this is going to be another contentious part for Te Ao Māori, that it's not referencing the Treaty of Waitangi. But I don't think there's anything particularly legal or in New Zealand's constitution that says it has to. So I think it is another black mark for the critics of the bill, but I'm not sure it's going to be fought over too much, that element of it.
Now, one of the key issues raised by critics about the bills is its focus on protecting property rights, as you mentioned, and, you know, gave the instance of the tobacco companies. How are opponents also arguing that this could undermine public interests like public health or interests like environmental protection?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the same sort of situation as that tobacco example. And, of course, that's just one of the examples that the critics are using. Supporters, you know, might challenge that and disagree with it. But essentially, the critics are saying, you know, just any climate change initiative could be interpreted as having a negative impact on business and therefore be ruled out or required compensation for those businesses. And so, I mean, there's going to be a lot of weight or a lot of power in this regulatory standards board that, you know, comes out of this. And there'll be a lot of power in whoever's put into that board to decide whether, you know, any particular piece of legislation in the future or decision by government is going to, you know, impede business. And of course, it's worth mentioning that their rulings won't be binding on the government, but they will carry a lot of force. So yes, it could inhibit the ability of governments to make progress on issues of inequality or climate change, public health, etc. Actually, I'll just quickly point out, Jonathan Boston, a professor at the Victoria University of Wellington, he gave the example in his critique of it, saying it's a bit like when slavery was abolished in the US, compensation having to be given to the slave owners for losing their right to enslave humans. So that's a particularly sort of bold and colourful example, but it gives you an idea of the nature of this.
Yeah, it doesn't sound too good. Now, on to cabinet reshuffle. Bryce, we're starting off the year with some changes to cabinet. Talk us through them.
Yeah, I mean, this is the prerogative of prime ministers to, you know, rearrange their team whenever they want. And so just over a year into this government, Luxon has decided to make a small reshuffle. And, you know, the big change was really with the Minister of Health. Then Minister of Health, Shane Retty, has been dumped from that portfolio, and Simeon Brown brought in. So, you know, that is quite a big shake-up. Health is one of the issues that this government is really struggling on at the moment. And, you know, there's not a consensus on how well Shane Retty's gone, but he hasn't equally made, you know, taken the problems away or fixed things. And so the government feel, I think, quite vulnerable on health. There's still a lot of public discontent on, about that sector. So, yeah, Luxon's brought in Simeon Brown, who's someone who is kind of seemed to get things done. So, yeah, that's quite a shake-up. I think there'll be quite a lot of sympathy for Shane Retty, who's, you know, was seen as maybe not a particularly bold and impactful Minister of Health, but he kind of knew the, you know, as a doctor himself, he knew the system quite well and was treading quite carefully. That's been controversial. And, of course, you've got... I'm just trying to think, you know, there's been some ramifications of Simeon Brown moving into health. He's given up some of his other big portfolios, the biggest one being transport, has now gone to Chris Bishop. So Chris Bishop becomes a bit more of a mega minister because he has housing, infrastructure, transport, and that's quite a nice fit, having those ones together, but it gives him a huge amount of power, especially since he's, you know, been pushing through the fast track. And he's also, of course, the campaign chair for the National Party. So, you know, he becomes more powerful. And the other big change, really, is Nicola Willis taking on the portfolio of economic development, which has now been renamed as economic growth. And so that means she's kind of in charge of, you know, one of the biggest government agencies, MB, and it gives her a lot more power in the economic portfolio. So
she's carrying quite a lot as far as portfolios go. How do you think this might affect her effectiveness and workload in the long run? Do you think it's...
Well, I mean, if you want a minister to be able to get things done, yeah, you give them more portfolios in the same area. And so this government says they are particularly focused on improving economic growth. So, yeah, I think it will improve her effectiveness to get through the National Party agenda, you know, for better or worse. And so, you know, she's stronger in that area, but it also means that there's a lot more weight on her shoulders if things aren't going well. Yes. And, you know, so far the economy really is not going well. So she'll become more to blame for when we don't get economic growth and when things don't turn around enough.
Okay. Well, just one last question. With Luxon, quote, mentioning a ruthless focus on health in 2025, with more of a focus on health, but also at the same time last year with all the health cut to the, all the funding cuts to the healthcare system, how do you think this combination is going to, work together to address the issues with the healthcare system?
Oh, look, it's just so unknown. It's hard for any politician that takes on that portfolio of health.
Yeah.
And you know, there are huge numbers of challenges in that portfolio. And, yeah, when the government's having to cut, you know, the budgets in there, it makes it very hard for the Minister of Health. And so arguably some of the failings of Shane Retty over the last year is just due to the fact that these budget cuts and lack of funding.
Yes.
So, I don't know, maybe Simeon Brown will introduce a bit more of sort of a culture war into this area. You know, he might focus more on issues of, I don't know, transgender or, race and ethnicity, and that might even take people's focus away from some of those reforms and get them fighting over, those issues of race and gender. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. It'll be very cynical if that's the case, but I can't really see how National is going to be able to get more popularity and or confidence of the public in that portfolio unless they kind of find some distractions to, you know, get people thinking about other things.
Yes. All right. Hey, Bryce Edwards, thank you very much for chatting to us this morning. We'll look forward to speaking with you in a couple of weeks. Cheers, mate.
Johnny.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.